today's audiocast for Friday, March 23rd, 2007 from AvWeb, the world's premier independent aviation news resource, is brought to you by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. AvWeb sat down with AvFuel President and CEO Craig Sincock at this week's Aviation Industry Expo in Orlando, Florida, to get a better idea of what affects AvGas and Jet A prices and supply. From a macroeconomic level, he says there are many factors that influence oil supply and demand, and thus price and availability.
Well, the fuel industry is you know, you look at jet fuel and AvGas, people always ask me, they say, well, how does it work? And, you know, what makes my price of jet fuel or AvGas go up or down? And why does it go up or down? And I think that when you look back, you have to go what I call to the fuel fundamentals. And crude oil is really the driving factor in what makes things go up or down. If you look at whether it's your car gas or jet fuel or AvGas, they run in parallel. When crude goes up to $70-$75 a barrel, your car gas costs you a little bit more, and so does your fuel for your airplane, than when it's at $50 a barrel. And certainly over the last few years, we've seen some tremendous increases in the price of crude oil. And then you can open up the Wall Street Journal any day and look and kind of get an idea which way your car gas is going just by following that, or your aircraft fuel. So that's what's really driving it. Underneath that, if you dig a little bit deeper and you take a little deeper dive, is that crude oil is a finite resource. And you know, there's been predictions to Congress from the early 1900s that we'd run out in 5 or 10 years, and you know, and there's predictions now of how much crude oil do we have on hand, and when will we run out as a society, you know, use it all up. And one of the interesting surprises that evolved over time was technology helped us a little bit extend. You know, we had no capacity in the early 1900s to do slant drilling into the ocean and offshore platforms and the things we do today. And that technology has helped extend that forecast of how long do we have for, you know, the supply of crude. But I think that in our lifetime, we probably are going to pass over what I call the cheap oil prices. You know, we're going to get past that halfway where, you know, when you look back in time, somewhere in this, you know, quarter century or whatever, we're starting to get crude oil at a price that is really starting to reflect that we're reaching some technological boundaries in drilling and things. And as that happens, then the price of crude goes up. The other thing driving the price of crude is the consumption. And in the U.S., our consumption has been going up for many, many decades. And now what we do is we see new economies evolving in the East, China, India, South America. And as those new economies evolve, then you have increased demand for product that wasn't there, wasn't competing with us for that energy, that crude oil barrel maybe 20 years ago. And you went to Beijing, it was full of bicycles, and you know, in the early 80s it was that way. And now you go there and there's cars everywhere and they're building, you know, automobile plants. So the competition for a finite resource is really what's driving the whole crude oil demand and supply picture. Another interesting way to look at crude oil too, it's like a commodity. In a lot of commodities, wheat, corn, or whatever, they go up and down supply, demand, also weather. But crude oil is mixed in with all those things, plus there's a lot of logistics and transportation that might get interrupted that could affect it. And it's also very political and even religious motivated in the supply and demand and control of. So as a commodity, it's a volatile one because it has all the factors, you know, plus maybe a couple that are out there. So that's really the background on crude, and that's really the background whether you're driving a car or flying an airplane, because it all relates to that. And that's the way I like to think of it.
Closer to home, he explains the intricacies of the aviation fuel market.
If you look more specifically to the products in our industry, the jet fuel and the AvGas, you're going to find that, you know, jet fuel, you know, I think some of the questions are, do you see any shortage in supply? and maybe I break it down into that category and you know, over a period of time. And then what is the real short-term outlook on pricing is what people always want to know. We know long-term, maybe crude's getting a little more expensive over the next 25 or 50 years or something. Hey, Craig, how about next month? And so let's break it down into that. The supply of jet and the supply of avgas, there's a good supply of both. Do they have some challenges? Oh, you know, absolutely. You know, both products have gotten more in the last number of years. They've gotten more into what we call just-in-time inventory, which is a popular term in manufacturing, because you don't want to have a lot of extra inventory around. There's a cost to it. There's a volatility. There's a risk in market to it. So whether you have parts for manufacturing or you have product for the petroleum industry, there's not as much extra slack in the inventory that there used to be. So we have a lot more just-in-time and much more precise forecasting of demand. Now, when that happens, any interruption, of course, if you have a pipeline break or a fire at a refinery or a hurricane or a snowstorm in Chicago or whatever it might be, those are all what we call short-term interruptions. And so then the marketplace will react. Prices normally, it's like an economics 101 class. You know, if there's a shortage and something happens, the prices go up. And I've always said that the best cure for high prices is high prices, because when they go up, what will happen is it will attract more supply to come from further distances to correct logistical problems, because people say, oh boy, that product, you know, jet, avgas, car gas, heating oil, is worth a lot, so I can now ship it. I'm going to ship some over there. And that high price will attract that extra supply out there, which then, in turn, drives the price back down as supply comes in. And so we saw that a lot with the Hurricane Katrina. You know, the prices moved up. The government did not come into play and put any kind of, system in place, and free economics and drove it right back down rather quickly. I mean, we had some car gas lines for a weekend, and everybody came to their senses by Monday, and prices started, they went up and started coming back down. But the high prices did help attract solutions, you know, to that piece. And so we see that just in time, and then you react to short-term interruptions. But there is plenty of jet fuel, you know, that's out there now, and for foreseeable future, there is plenty of avgas. Avgas has some other unique things to it. Of course, it's leaded, and a lot of refineries and pipelines and tank companies, and they don't really want to deal with the lead. It's a lot of extra compliance and risk, and so just so many people have gotten out of it over the years that it's a small boutique system that's out there. And I can tell you that HavFuel Corporation and many of the other suppliers that are out in the industry, we transport avgas by we do it by railroad cars. We run hundreds and hundreds of them, and we ship it by barge, we ship it by truck, and it moves around the country in what I call contained type shipping. Because really, running it on pipelines, you don't have anything to do with the interface anymore because it contains lead. Mm. And that becomes more challenging year to year. And I think the industry as a whole is starting to address it with, really doing some serious thinking about alternative power plants in those smaller aircraft. And probably over time, what I'm hoping for is that it will be a nice soft landing as we go out over a number of years, and we can still have a production of avgas and make it kind of phase down over time, versus some intervention by other authorities saying we got to have avgas finished with because it has lead in it. And it doesn't, there's not a lot of avgas consumption when you compare it. It's very tiny compared to motor gas or whatever. Motor gas is about 50% of the refinery slate. Aviation is about 6.8 to 7.2%. And most of that 6.8 or 7.2 is, Avgash can't even find as a percentage. That's off the table. I'm talking most of jet here. And jet is, that 7%-ish, and most of that is military and airlines. So the business jet market is even small. And Avgas is, it's hard to get statistics on it, is because it is really tiny. So we're hoping really the direction there is one where over time the different power plants will help us as an industry reach solutions, because we do have a leaded product and we can do a slow phase down of that product. Is that happening next year, next 3 years? So for the people listening in, no. It's hopefully that we don't know that it's happening at any rate of speed like that, but we think over a longer horizon, it would most likely go that route.
Long term, Sincock says the aviation industry is working on alternative fuels to replace Avgas.
All the manufacturers belong to organizations like the Coordinated Research Council, where we do try to reach solutions for alternative fuels for Avgas. And so everybody's working on it, and it just has some more technical things than probably I can address here, or I'm not equipped to address, is that you're trying to get the octane up, and we're actually competing as an industry with other octane-enhancing agents that they need for motor gas. And when you've taken an MTB out of the motor gas pool, they're using, you're competing for the same components that make premium gasoline premium. So we are seeing, some pretty good increases in the cost of the production of the product. We have a number of refineries that make that for us, they're all, I'm looking from one to the other, and they all have similar issues that they're facing and similar competition for that component of the fuel. So back to the picture, is it, is there a supply of jet and Avgas? Yep, there is one, and we've got one for the foreseeable future, and it doesn't look stressed, except for when you have interruptions that we talked about a few minutes ago, like just-in-time inventory. Of course, you're going to get reactions in the marketplace that tend to cure themselves rather well, and that's really the outlook of the fuel. And earlier we were talking about crude oil. As you go way out in the future, 50, 100 years, of course, somewhere along the line it gets more finite and drives energy cost up, and those are long-term technical solutions. And now you come back to the question, everybody says, okay, Craig, how much is it going to cost this year and for flying? And I think what we're seeing is actually less than last year. There's no magic crystal ball. It's like trying to forecast where the stock market's going to go or something. But what we're seeing is the crude oil is kind of hovering around $60 a barrel. And, of course, last year we saw it up over 70, 75, we were up to. And the forecast, I think, from the Department of Energy for the 2007 forecast is for $59.50. And at AvFuel, we're trying to put a variation on that when we do our economic models of about $4.50 a barrel each way from the government's number. Now, is that government number good? Well, no, we've seen it go a lot higher than what the Department of Energy forecast, but we've also seen it a lot lower. It's about the best number you can get. So if somebody asked me, and they were a friend of mine out at the airport, and said, what's it going to be? I would say pretty much where we are today is a good, with some variation in it through the end of the year. And that, of course, is barring any large, any events or something that would affect that. But it's a good planning number that a lot of companies are using. So that's a little bit on pricing, a little bit on the supply, a little bit on the challenges of logistics and the big picture of the extra demand around the globe from all the other countries.
He believes the FAA and Congress will eventually compromise on FAA reauthorization, with higher fuel taxes likely.
Well, user fees or an aviation tax, there's a lot of tax built into the fuel, already, and certainly along the way you also have state and some counties or some airports have flow fees. And in fact, it's rather challenging from the fuel supply area. AvFuel Corporation and the others that supply to the industry, we're tasked with keeping track of all these fuel taxes at different airports and things around the country. It's a kind of interesting project, to say the least. But if you look at the situation, the FAA is looking for additional funds. They certainly do need some modernization, and there's a lot of different camps out there that are saying, you know, no user fee and no new fuel tax, and others are saying that's what we need and that's what we should do and you should pay or we shouldn't. And you know, when you get down to it, I think that Congress, although sometimes they're picked on, they also have some very smart people there. And what we're going to see that is that there'll be some compromise that will be struck and hopefully some balance. And I think the cooler heads will prevail. And over time, we'll get a balancing of is this the right way to do it? Is there a slightly better way? And there'll be some compromises, like most things in life. And everybody will have their day to present their case. But it wouldn't shock me in the end if we saw a little bit more of the government driving a little more revenue to pay for their projects that they have to do, and that is part of the compromise. Now, whether it will come in a user fee or a fuel tax, I'm not sure. You know, and will it be a huge one that I've seen reported in some of the media? I'm hoping not. I hope that there's a little more balance in there, and I think that's where we'll end up. We'll end up with some sort of balance, and frankly, I can't tell you where it will be. I would like to see it not really get too far out of whack, of course. But if there has to be something, let's take a look at it. The more fundamental question in there, or the one that we should all think on, is who controls the FAA? I mean, Congress has the oversight of the FAA right now, and there's been some proposals out there of changing that to some other group that was some constitution of or made up of the industry. And I really believe that we should leave this is just a personal belief, the oversight of the FAA with Congress. That's probably where it belongs. And so you have a control issue that's out there, and you have a how to tax issue, and you have how much to increase it. And those are, three separate questions. And I'm hoping that we do see some good leadership on that with our Congress.
F-Fuel President and CEO Craig Sincock at this week's Aviation Industry Expo in Orlando, Florida. Here's your invitation to visit www.fweb.com today and give us your feedback with the question of the week, FBO of the week, or submit your photos and videos. And don't forget the events calendar, classified ads, fwebbooks.com, and marketplace. You'll love the new look and functionality of fweb.com. Comments on this audiocast are welcome at audionews@fweb.com, and this report was brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. Look for FWeb's next audiocast on Monday, March 26th. I'm Mike Blakeney for FWeb Audio. Thanks for listening.